go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Deep Space High, Sci-Fi TV Review Podcast, where we discuss the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's.
What are you?
Got a little Australian there.
Yeah.
Today's Sci-Fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve Crocky.
That's a terrible Australian accent. Well, I'm Sky Marshall Chris, but.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
It went off the rails, but I'm rolling with it.
Okay, well, it works, so.
So, Chris, I know this is kind of not entirely show-related, but we got some terrible news over the weekend, and Chadwick Boseman passing away at the young age of 43 because of freaking colon cancer.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge shock, because, I mean, he didn't tell anybody that he had cancer.
No, I think maybe his family and very, very close friends, but as far as from what I can tell in some of the articles I've read, that there wasn't many people that knew. Co-stars or directors and, you know, other people like that, they had no idea.
Well, I mean, I hate to say this, but do you think he disclosed it to Marvel? And if Marvel did, would they have casted him as the Black Panther if he did?
Well, I don't know. Probably, I mean, because he was diagnosed with it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and it was stage three, which is still not great, but, you know, he was able to go on for 3.5 years after being diagnosed. I think maybe the doctors gave him initially pretty good odds, but who knows? I don't know how those contracts are drawn up, if he has to freaking disclose that kind of stuff or whatnot, or, you know, when or how he has to disclose it, but.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I mean, it's still sad though. I mean, it was a complete shock. I mean, just another fucking horrible incident that happened in 2020. I mean,
to a very good actor, and I mean, not only in his Black Panther roles, but in his 42 roles when he played, I think it was Thurgood Marshall, and when he's done several movies where he's just
Was a number one draft pick to the Cleveland Browns in one of his movies. Oh, right.
Was that him in Draft Day? I've only seen it once, but I don't.
Yeah, he played Vontae Mack in Draft Day, which is, I guess most of you guys, well, I guess nobody really knows, but Cowboys are my number one football team, but the Browns are my number two team, and I get ragged on a lot. So, but that's where I get the joke from, and that's why I like Draft Day. It's the only time they're good at drafting, but I feel bad that he passed away. I mean, it was a, what a shock. I mean, I'm sorry to hear about it, too, especially for his family, you know?
Yeah, definitely thoughts go out to his family. And, you know, it's devastating to have someone go through that. He's been battling for 4 years. I saw something. He had surgeries and chemotherapy in between movies and roles, and that's just tough to go through.
Well, how did he stay in such good shape, though? I mean, chemo's tough. And I saw some photo, or I saw a photo of him recently before he passed away, and supposedly he was super skinny. Like, how was he able to get through that?
He lost a ton of weight in the last 6 to 9 months. And I think that's probably when it turns to stage four and got really bad. But other than that, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it was devastating to see, kind of. I think in the early on when he was first diagnosed, he was able to do chemotherapy in between and kind of bulk back up for some of those roles, or just kind of look normal. And then once it turned stage four and he started losing a lot of weight and all this terrible things, it's kind of when people might have started speculating that maybe he was sick, or I think he even said he was on drugs, but
I don't
now
know
we know the truth
drugs, but
no he, I don't think he was I mean, yeah, now we know he wasn't, so
yeah. But I mean, it's a tragedy. I mean, it's another, well, it's 2020, unfortunately, you know.
Star gone too young. Mm-hmm. So, But on that sad note, let's go ahead and get into this episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, I watched the first three episodes of Alter Carbon. That's the new sci-fi show that we were checking out. It's on Netflix if anybody wants to check it out or watch it along with us. But I was a little disappointed in the first two episodes. And I'm kind of disappointed in the show so far.
Okay, why? Well, I'll bite. Why?
One, it's really overdramatic. Like, they way unnecessary slow motion drama scenes from 20 different angles. It's like the first 10 minutes of the show shouldn't be 30 seconds in timeline. You know what I mean? Well, they take way too long in doing those dramatic sequences. They kind of overdid it.
And then, you're talking about the opening scene where you see his last sleeve's death.
Well, not necessarily. They do it throughout the first couple episodes, or well, mostly the first two. Three wasn't bad, but they way too much camera angles, way over drama, way too much suspense trying to build that, and it kind of killed it. It wasn't a great way to start the first episode, you know?
I mean,
it didn't hook me in, you know? It was more of a deterrent. It's like, okay, we're going to do more slow-mo. More storylines when I have no understanding of what's going on and no understanding of the background. It's kind of confusing. It wasn't a great start for me.
Well, that's the thing. The start of the episode is you kind of see a flashback and you see his last sleeve's death. And then it kind of intertwined with him being re-sleeved and brought back to life in this new body.
Yeah, and then the sleeves kind of confused me at first too, because, you know, they're talking about the sleeves, but you have no idea what the hell they're talking about. You don't know that they're talking about human bodies. You know, when they talk about sleeves, they're talking about like human skin, not necessarily just the skin, but like the entire body. They just consider it disposable, and you don't realize that in the first 20 minutes when they're going through all these sequences.
Yeah, and that's something you got to learn. And for those who have maybe having trouble understanding what's going on in the first parts of this episode or haven't read the book, you mean, like Chris was explaining, the sleeve is just the human mind is now packed and stored inside this little disc. And they call it a stack. They insert in between, I think, your first two vertebrae or something like that. And yeah, that
like
contains
near the base
all your
of the spine.
Yeah.
Or the brainstem, I should say.
Yeah, and that contains all your memories and everything. And so now the human body is seen as disposable, since you could be sleeved and re-sleeved, which is put into different bodies and essentially take over that body.
Yeah. So your consciousness can get transferred over.
Yeah.
It's almost like Avatar.
Kind of, yeah.
But instead of like getting in the machines and you're still in your body, you actually like, it's almost like a floppy disk, I should say, you know, like just go from one computer to the other. It almost kind of looks like a circular floppy disk more than a CD. You know what I mean?
Well,
if anybody knows what a floppy disk is anymore.
Maybe some people do, but
the old people do.
People will be surprised that you know what a floppy disk is.
I know, right? I'm the oldest young person you'll ever meet. that's what Dad likes to say.
Yeah, but let's talk about a little bit in the first episode. You were saying how it starts off slow, and that's a real, you know, that kind of establishes the world. So I understand where it could be slow. I'm not seeing your point yet where you're talking about the slow motion action scenes.
I guess I should just say, like, maybe rewatch the first episode. Maybe I need to rewatch them, because that really turned me off when it came to the show. And I didn't pay attention as much the first two episodes as I did the third one. Now, then again, well, all the nudity brought me back in. That's for damn sure.
Well, maybe you're a little too high during the start of the first episode, and it just felt slow. Because, like I said, I don't recall it being slow. I mean, there is parts where it feels like some, you know, they do like a slow motion kill or something like that in the start. But
well, the slow motion kill shouldn't take 2 minutes to do a slow motion kill. I mean, they go through a lot of time with that. Maybe it was I was just stoned and I'm overdue the nitpicking, but that was my initial reaction.
Maybe, but yeah, let's talk about this first episode because, like I said, it establishes the world. You got to understand what a stack is, which is kind of their memory thing. You got to understand what a sleeve is. It's just a human body, but now in this future world, it's considered disposable and just kind of.
No,
not as necessary as the stack.
I don't think they explained it, but did they explain like how far into the future they were? I know when, I know when they bring him back, they say that he was gone for, or he's been in storage for like 250 years. But how long in the future is it from today?
It doesn't really state. It's just centuries ahead. So. Probably from the time episode one takes place after he comes back being re-sleeved. So 250 years from the last time he's alive. So you got to think, okay, this is probably a good 400 years in the future, maybe 500 years in the future. In this opening episode, like I said, you establish what a stack is, what a sleeve is, but you also know that Takeshi Kovacs, who is our main character, is not from Earth. So he is from another planet. Now, I don't remember if it explains in this episode or the later episode, or if I just know this from the book, but at some point humans sent out colonies to these other planets, just developed transports and space travel to where they could reach these far worlds, and settle colonies.
Right.
So yeah, I'm thinking at least 500 years ish in the future.
What's the main character's name again? It was
Takeshi Kovacs.
That's gonna be a rough name. All right, Takeshi. We're just gonna call him Takeshi for right now.
Oh, I just call him either Talk or Kovac.
Well, I figured Takeshi's actually kind of fun to say because it's
Takeshi.
Takeshi.
It's Japanese.
I know, but it's kind of fun to say Takeshi.
Yeah, but you're not saying right. It's Takeshi.
I'm trying to. It's like two catching, and I'm just kind of basically saying two catching.
Well, it's Talk. I'll refer to him as either Talk or Kovacs. Probably Kovacs.
All right, Kovacs is fine. I don't know. Okay. I never do names. I always go with nicknames. It's kind of my thing. So, all right,
I'm sure a nickname will develop at some point naturally during these next few episodes. But this first episode, Kovacs is. I mean, you kind of get an understanding where he comes from. You find out he's an envoy.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask. What's an envoy?
Well, yeah, they spin it as envoys were kind of this. They spin it as a terrorist group or kind of an opposing force to the Protectorate. The Protectorate being, say, probably similar to the Federation or the New Republic or the Republic in Star Wars or something like that.
It almost seems more like the Empire.
Well.
Because yeah, he was really talking know. About that, because he was saying history's written by the victor, and they consider him a terrorist, but he doesn't.
He doesn't. Everyone calls him a terrorist, and, you know, kind of Lieutenant Ortega is, you know, she's consistently referring to him as a terrorist, and why Bancroft or whatever the super rich dude spun him up. For whatever reason, and she's just constantly referring to him as a terrorist. Why would they do this? Why would they bring back this envoy terrorist after he's been on ice for 250 years? So, yeah, they're real adamant on calling him a terrorist when he's like, I'm not really a terrorist, but he's just an elite soldier who's probably the best of the best of the best, sir. Men in Black reference.
Oh, thank you. That was driving me crazy. I knew the reference, but I'm like, wait, where was that from? That's right.
Yeah, Men in Black. But you find out he's an envoy. He was kind of in that opening sequence when you see the Protectorate, which is like those six orangish eyed soldiers coming in who killed his girlfriend and like real death his girlfriend, which for those of you who don't know, real death in this world is when your stack gets destroyed. So if it gets destroyed, you can't be put into a new body. Thus, you're gone forever at that point.
And then I think they also say it was a shot to the head. Like if you destroy the brain, it will.
Yeah, when he gets relieved in Alcatraz and they kind of are going through the reorientation of understanding what the hell's going on. Yeah, they said you got to avoid direct shots to the neck or your head exploding or, you know, stuff like that.
Right. So, well, I mean, it's kind of, it's weird because this is one of the weirder, not the typical kind of sci-fi shows that I normally watch.
Yeah, and it wasn't either when I first watched this.
Yeah, I mean, it was, they have like a weird, it's almost like an underground society, you know, when it comes to these sleeves. I mean, they're so disposable. You have entire markets where you can get sleeves, underground fights, or even, I don't even want to say underground fights, because they're rich people do it too. Because the rich guy who got, what's his name again?
Kovacs.
Kovacs. Okay, so Kovacs, you know, the guy that brought him out, the rich guy that brought him back after 250 years, yeah. You know, he's hosting he's hosting fights, and these people, husband and wife, are willing to kill each other as entertainment for the rich people just to get a better sleeve. So, I mean, there's no, or I don't want to say there's no, because I thought it was interesting that they still have religion in this timeline. They still have Christianity. They still have Islam. They still have, or at least those are the two that they mentioned so far that are opposed to this.
Well, they specifically call out Catholics in this show because they follow Ortega, who's Mexican ancestry, devout Catholics. And, you know, in the first episode, they're really clear that the Catholics think once you're dead, once your first sleeve that you're born with dies, that you're died, that you actually die, and if your stack is taken and put into another sleeve, even if it's for something like identifying your own murderer, that person's soul will now go to hell.
I'm curious why they chose Catholics when doing the show, because I mean you could go with a lot more stricter, why not the Mormons may make more sense.
Well, I mean, that's how it is in the book. They pick Catholics, and it probably has something to do with just, you know, Catholics. I mean, there's religions out there.
Well,
very devout, and they're very stuck to their way. So
yeah, but I mean, I figured Islam would be, they're a bit more stricter than Catholics. You know, Islam would make sense too. You know, so well, I mean, maybe it's like
take it as however you want to take it. But the author is originally British, so maybe he's, you know, under the British, I don't know what their church is, the First Church of Britain or whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. And I know they're, you know, they might have things against Catholics, so that's why he just picked the Catholics.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's just something, because I in one of the, I don't remember if it was episode 2 or episode 3, one of the detectives, her, somebody that she was working with, said that he was Muslim, and he seemed like he had no problem with it. I'm like, so wait, why would Catholics be the odd man out in this futuristic sci-fi world? You know what I mean?
It's probably just like the author was like, okay, he probably took it as an internal perspective, which religion is least likely to change, and maybe that's just the one he saw.
Meh.
Or maybe he's, you know, because he's British, they don't have a great history with Catholics, and that's why he picked on them.
I mean, that could be true. I mean, the British hate Catholics. I mean, that was part of the big rivalry between England and France. France was Catholic. England was originally, I think it was Baptist, but then they said, you know, F you to the Pope, and they started their own church, the Church of England or something like that. So,
yeah, so that's probably why. Guy's British and they don't like Catholics. So, but we don't need to overthink into that. But
I mean, it is a, I think we kind of should, almost because, again, I don't know how this show develops. You do, I don't. So I'm kind of going through it. And I feel like that's going to be a kind of a central theme around the show. Maybe not necessarily in season 1, but maybe in season 2 or season 3. So it may be important in the future.
I'll tell you for now, it'll be semi-important, but not as important as you're thinking it's going
to
be.
Then it would seem to me that they would try and make it the predominant theme in season 3. Because, you know, something I've noticed in these kinds of shows, they don't do anything by accident. You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to have anti-religion as kind of part of it, I figured it's going to be some kind of – or religion, the religion aspect, I figured there'd be some kind of storyline through that.
Well, here's from what I can tell you. In reading I'm almost through the first book, or I'm about halfway through the first book. It's not a super important theme there. It's not super important throughout the first season or the second season. Actually, Netflix canceled Altered Carbon, so unfortunately, we're not going to get a third season, even though it's probably one of my favorite shows on Netflix.
Are you sure? I thought that they were going to finish season three. I mean, I didn't know that it was canceled, but I heard that they were... I thought I heard something that they were working on a season three.
I think they might have looked into it, and then they came out and canceled it, I think, yesterday.
Keep talking. I'm going to fact check you on that one.
Fact check me, but when you tell me I'm right, I'm going to tell you to...
Well, if you just hear silence for a while, then you were, but I just won't admit it, so you would just keep going.
Oh, here it is, Wikipedia. In August of 2020, the series was canceled after two seasons, so now you just go find a more reputable source, and you can shove it.
All right, well, we got Deadline.com. Netflix has opted not to order a third season of the mind-bending, body-swapping sci-fi series Altered Carbon.
Yep.
The 8-episode season 2 of Cyberpunk. Oh, we don't want to go into too much of it. I hear Netflix's decision not to proceed with further season was made in April and is not COVID-related, but stems from the streamer standard viewership versus cost renewal view process. So they weren't making enough money based off of the amount of people
who weren't getting enough views based off of how much they spend per episode, which makes sense because it's probably got a cult following, and it's obviously watching the first three episodes, you could tell it's pretty high budget.
Oh, I mean, it was definitely high budget. The graphics were phenomenal. I mean, the CGI was phenomenal. I'll give them that. Like, that, they did a great job there. But
yeah. Yeah. Let's get in. I want to get up to the plot of the season that we're going to talk about, which is set up in episode one. And we find out that Kovac just pulled out of, well, as he says, being put on ice by this rich, and they call him meth, which is weird because I always think of the drug when you say meth, but, you know, apparently this is like the top, you know, you have the top 1% in today's, and this is probably like the top 1% of the 1% is what it seems like.
Yeah. Is this when were the books written? You know,
I think the first one came out in the mid 2000s. So probably 15 years ago.
Do you think that the books were trying to do like a parallel to what was going on into society today? Because it's almost how it seemed like when watching it, because I felt like the issues that are being brought up, I don't know if it was just a show, but it seems like there's a lot of parallels between the class differentials that we see today.
I mean, I think definitely, yes, it's definitely, it touches on points and it pulls from what we saw. Pulling from 15 years ago, the income disparity and, you know, the filthy rich are doing crazy things. And there's even a line in episode, I think it's 3, where it's like, you know, the law, one of the ladies who is super rich is like, the law doesn't apply to us. So, yeah, I mean, it obviously, it hits on those points, class issues, maybe religious issues. Like I said, I'm only halfway through the first book. I haven't read all three of them yet. But yeah, back to the point I was making with the plot, it's just, He gets pulled out and by this rich guy, Lawrence Bancroft, and essentially he's like, I'm leasing you out so you can solve my own murder. And at first you sit there and you think like, what? Like, you're alive. And that's what his reaction is, Kovacs' reaction. He's like, you're alive. So obviously your stack survived, so you know who killed you, because the way the stacks work is you remember up to the very last moment.
Right.
And then once the sleeve dies and kind of the brain shuts down, well, that's where the memory ceases until they spin you back up into another sleeve. But this is where we find out that, you know, Bancroft is so rich that he actually has backups. So every 48 hours, his whatever stack he's using gets uploaded into like a server for remote storage. So if he ever dies, he could just pull the last, you know, the last backup and continue on living. And this is prove effective since it says in the episode that he's over 360 years old.
Yeah. I mean, basically the guy has gotten so rich, he can live forever. Theoretically.
Yeah. And that's one of the things Kovac says. He's like, I've never met anyone so rich that they can afford, I don't remember what they call it, but that can afford to essentially back up their memory. So that's the,
I mean,
that's what we're looking at. And I know that's the plot of all 10 episodes, or, you know, the whole season.
Is
so
it? I mean,
it's not going to like it.
Cause I find that confusing. Yeah, like you're really trying to find a killer that when you're immortal, like, well, you can do it yourself. Why do you got to bring this guy out of 250 years of storage?
Well, you gotta think about it as the police. Well, there's a couple points that I'll make. The police investigated it, determined that there was no leads or no nothing, and that it was most likely a suicide, and closed the case and moved on. Bancroft, who is kind of paranoid because one of his kids references it in episode 3, where it's actually the scene where he catches, it's the daughter who's in the mom's clone banging some of the help.
Yeah, that was weird. That, that was kind of, you can almost say that was very taboo, because supposedly the daughter was only 12 years old.
No, she's the 12th daughter.
Wait, 12th daughter? I thought she said she was 12. No, I think she was 12 years old.
No.
Are you sure? Because that was a...
yes.
I was going to say, because that would have been really fucking weird. Like, seriously? Because they were talking about that with the son. Because remember, they said that the son that kept getting drunk at the party, he was just a kid. He never had a chance to grow up or do anything because they just moved him to an adult body. So that's why I'm like, are you sure? Because...
Yes, I'm sure, because she says, I'm the 12th daughter, whatever her name was. And that's when Kovacs is like, well, because in the first episode, Lawrence Bancroft just says he has a particle gun in a safe, which only he and his wife, Miriam, have access to. So flash forward to the scene we're talking about in episode 3. Kovacs brings that up. He goes, well, then your dad has this that only you and your mom, or him and your mom can open. But if maybe a child in your mom's sleeve could open it. And that's when she's like, I'm not a child. I'm 67 years old. And I'm just doing this to have fun, because her clones have all the best, you know, she has magic lady bits in her, in her clones.
Well, okay. That's funny. But I was, well, when she said that, the 67 year old, I thought that she was talking about the age of the skin. Like, that's how old the age of the skin is supposed to be. Because it's supposed to look a little older.
She's born, she is 67 years old. She's the 12th daughter. I don't know if she might be the last daughter, given that they have 21 kids. But she says she's, you know, mentally she's 67 years old, or she was born 67 years prior to this season.
Maybe I need to rewatch these first three episodes.
Maybe, because...
One, it's not as weird as I thought it was. It's still kind of weird, still... switching into your mom's body to bang, but I thought it was like a 12-year-old really getting into the mom's sleeve to bang guys. Like, what the fuck? Okay, so it's not as weird as I thought. Thank God.
So the plot of this story is Kovacs is investigating Bancroft's essential murder, and I think, you know, you brought up the point, well, why wouldn't he just move on? And I think with him being so paranoid, because his daughter even stated, which is why I brought her up originally, that he wrote his will in a way that if he were to die real death and not be able to be spun back up, that the kids and they would get nothing.
Yeah.
So someone this paranoid, if someone's really out to get him, last thing he wants is to be real death, because he wants to pull the power. He wants to be eternal and live forever.
Yeah.
So if someone's trying to hinder those plans, he wants to make sure he knows who and have prevent it from happening again.
Yeah. I mean, and it's actually pretty smart, because, I mean, now you give him no incentive to kill them, because – or actually it would give him more incentive to help them, because if he does die, then they're fucked, because it seems like they care more about doing their own thing and banging random guys in their mom's sleeves than actually making a living from themselves.
Yeah, and the first episode is like I said, essentially that they set up the plot. They're like, Kovacs is hesitant at first. He's like, no, just I'm going to go and, you know, enjoy the night, and then I want to be put back on ice. Obviously, Bancroft is like, think about it. He, you know, after doing, I guess, a ton of drugs and going to a strip club, he's like, you know what? I'll take the job. Which is, I mean... all right, I guess that'll get your priorities straight. I know there was a little more to it than that, but he's like, to you know, potentially be rich because he offers them 50 million UN credits, whatever that is, and then a pardon so that he doesn't have to go back on ice and can be re-sleeved into who or whatever he wants. And he's like, okay, that doesn't sound too bad. I think I might take you up on that. Which, I think that's how the first episode ends. He goes to the Raven to get his hotel. I mean,
was that in episode 2, though, where that fight scene happened at the hotel? I think it was episode
2. No, that was episode...
When he checks into the hotel and... Or was that the end of the first one?
No, that was the end. That was the end of the first one, because the end of the first one is he does that. He gets, you know, kind of Ortega toys with him a little bit, and saying, "I just thought you were gonna get a meal, get a bang, and then go back on ice." And Kovacs is like, "Yeah, well, these pricks ruined it." And then he goes up to his room and he calls Bancroft and takes the job.
But I mean, that was a great fight scene, though.
Oh, it was. It was awesome. And it sets up the show very nice, because this show is, one, it's well choreographed. We could tell that through the first 3 episodes and the fight scenes we see. And it's freaking gory as shit. And, like, but it sets up the gore nicely. And I think, given that I've read some of the books, I mean, the gore in this show still has nothing compared to the books. The book is like, damn.
Maybe I need to read the book then, because, I mean, I don't really read.
I want you to watch all these, you know, the first 2 seasons first, or well, the only 2 seasons first, because I think if there's one thing I found out is, especially through these first 3 episodes, that the book is a lot more detailed and there's a lot more to a lot of the scenes that are happening in the books, obviously, because the first book's 400 pages, which they're cramming into 10 1-hour episodes. So obviously things are going to get cut and it's going to be, you know, a little diluted, mm-hmm. but I think I want to get your take on this without you reading the book, and then maybe you can go back and read it some other time.
I might do that. I mean, I've been reading a lot of books lately. I'm trying to build up my library, so.
But, yeah, and let's keep talking about the series a little bit. Let's talk about what happens in episode 2. I watched episode 2, and I think it's definitely my least favorite of the 3.
I would agree with that. Because, I mean, was it episode 1 or was it episode 2 that he finds the Marine?
2.
Okay, so that's what happened. And then he tries to help out him and his wife.
Well, yeah,
I'm skipping.
Yeah. In 2, essentially, you get more Ortega backstory, which she's a more predominant character in the TV show than she is the book. So you get a little bit of backstory on her. You know, she comes from Mexican descent. They're hardcore Catholic. I think it was in this episode where they tell us that her father was a police captain and he also died in the line of duty, and they couldn't spin him back up because of his religious beliefs, so they couldn't catch his killer.
Oh, yeah, and that's why she's so hell-bent on, you know, trying to find the killer, because she thinks that these 2 cases might be related, right?
I'm not sure if that's the case, but I think it's definitely a motive to drive her, because she's definitely not as devout as her family is, and she want, you know, being a police officer, she wants people to be spun back up so they can catch the bad guys. And I think it's even later in this episode. Yeah, it has to be later in this episode where she went into a confession booth, and you can see she's kind of abusing her power as a police officer. She, like, early in this episode, we see a body kind of fall into a river or a lake with this boy and this dad fishing. And given what happens kind of in her storyline in this episode, they say the police ended up losing her body, because the mother comes down to the station and is like, "How come I can't get my daughter's body back? How come? What did you do with her?"
Yeah,
and they don't say anything.
She kept it in the morgue.
Well, not only that, she kept it in the morgue, kind of hidden, and the cooler that she was in said it was an empty cooler, but that's where she was storing the body. So there's some tie. There's some reason why she's kind of keeping this body hidden, and kind of, even though she hasn't stolen it, she has given it the police department the impression that it's missing, because her captain and her partner think it's missing. And then even when she pulls the body out and puts it on a slab, the coroner is like, "Where have you been?" So for some reason she's hiding bodies and kind of doing, there's some interesting things happening with her. She kind of seems like she's about to go off the rails, and she might be one flew off the cuckoo's nest or whatever.
I mean, she's pretty hot. So, I mean, she's got to balance out on the hot crazy scale, you know? So she's got to match the craziness with the hotness.
Yeah, I knew you would go there.
For those that's just because you're the one who recommended How I Met Your Mother to me. So, I mean.
I know, but I didn't know it would be your whole life and half your references would come from there.
I did not either. The other half is Star Trek, by the way.
Yeah, it really is.
With a splash of Dodgeball and a little bit of Forrest Gump.
So this in episode two, like you mentioned, we kind of see it feels more like a detective episode where Kovacs is kind of getting into the investigation. He gets all the death threats that have been sent to Bancroft, and he's kind of combing through them. And this is where he picks one out, which is the ex-Marine, whose name is Vernon Elliott, and tries to get more on him of what his motive would be to want to kill this super rich meth dude. So comes to find out that given that his daughter was a hooker, stripper, I don't know what to call him, when Kovacs goes to Licktown and it's like, you could, you know, put some money in and then you could see me, and then you can put some money in and you can touch me, and I'm sure there's more where he like put some money in and you could fuck me. So I guess I've been calling them stripper hookers.
I don't know. I mean, I
or call them the entertainment. I don't know.
I mean, it's the level of casual sex that they have is ridiculous. Like, no, don't get me wrong, I love all the nudity in the show. I mean,
yeah, like, but every it's almost like it's
like an naked chick. So, but
it's all all expected in this series. It's like,
yeah, I mean, they really go heavy into the, like, nobody gives a shit about, you know, marriage. I kind of get why the Catholics are a little mad. You know, it's all just like, oh, hey, we're going to bang you. We don't give a shit what happens because you can just get a new sleeve. You know?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I mean, it's just sex is so casual and the nudity is so casual in this show. It's almost like it's a part of life. And like you were saying, where it's just like, besides the Catholics, it doesn't matter what happens within a marriage, given that the Bancrofts have been married for over 100 years. And then at the end of the second episode, she goes and bangs them. And then, you know, in the third episode, Lawrence is like, I know you banged my wife. I want you to stay away from her. And he's like, you care who she bangs? He's like, no, I just don't want her banging you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, okay. I mean, I guess after 100 years, you kind of got to
mix it up.
Branch your wings.
I guess. But
or spread your wings, whatever.
But I mean, hell, what's the, well, I guess I was going to say then, what's the point of marriage? Because I mean, How does it work with the synthetic ones? You know what I mean? Like because they make their own sleeves. I guess that's why they're super rich, because they make synthetic sleeves. So you can get like customizable hot ones, whether you're a guy or a girl. And it's like, can they have kids? Like, what's the point of even having kids anymore? Is it just for the rich or the poor, you know, fucked over because they got no money and they're always going to be poor? You know what I mean?
I think this might be a situation where we're kind of getting a misconception of how this world operates, given we're seeing it from a rich point of view. I think that's kind of why they make the Catholics kind of a story to kind of see. And you see it, I think, in the first episode a little bit when Kovacs is getting out of being re-sleeved, and they put this little girl who I guess died in an accident or somehow, and it's, you know, it's the law to where the government owes them a free sleeve if that's what happens. And they re-sleeved her in like this 50-year-old woman's body, but she's like a 7-year-old girl.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I also got the idea when I thought the daughter was 12 years old using the mom's sleeve, because no, that little girl was trapped in a old lady's body. You know, she was older than her parents.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where she died in an accident, and according to law, they get a free sleeve now, but they have no say on what that sleeve is. So if they wanted to put her back in a younger body or in a different sleeve, they would have to pay for the upgrade, which it seems like in this case, most people can't afford in this world. Hmm. So even if they were to die, so like, for example, when Kovacs goes and tracks down this Marine by the name of Vernon Elliott, finds out his wife is on ICE because she was a hacker and got caught and has to do 30 years. And then his daughter died, but he can't afford to get a new sleeve to have her respun back up. So seems like
which form of, I'm curious, you know, I'm getting a little deep into it because, you know, it's a sci-fi show. So there's always some kind of deeper meaning behind, you know, these kinds of sci-fi shows. So do you think that this is supposed to be a depiction of the way capitalist society would happen in the future, that if we were able to transfer, you know, our consciousness, it seems like that's kind of what they're trying to depict, that the rich are always going to stay rich and they can afford all the nice stuff so they can live forever while the poor people are getting screwed.
Well, yeah, that's what we talked about earlier. It definitely brings up the class issues where, yeah, you know, the rich get whatever they want, like you just said.
Is it a riff on capitalism, or is it a riff on communism? Because unfortunately, the same thing would happen. It would still be the same result, except everybody would just be poor.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably just a riff on the super rich. So I wouldn't say it's taking capitalism on head on. I just think it'd be like, you know, it's kind of BS that these rich, you know, they have four clones sitting on ice. They get backed up every 48 hours. They can do whatever they want. But poor little Sally, who died in an accident, now at 7 years old, now has to be stuck in a 50-year-old's body.
Right.
So yeah, I think it does tackle the class issue, where legally, you know, the rich can get with whatever they want because they have so much money and so much power, and then even physically they can buy whatever the hell they want and do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be something that I keep an eye out throughout the show, because, you know, I'm an econ major and I'm a history major, so this kind of the battle between the classes is something you see throughout history. So I kind of find it fascinating, like, ooh, what way are they doing this through? And right now it's starting to look more like capitalism, but it's just something.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's sci-fi. You got to look deep into the shit, and then it's what I'm interested in. So just thought I'd bring that up.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I have seen this whole season, but I haven't seen this season in 2.5 years. So while I know which direction it will go in and what the end result is, a lot of this stuff is new to me. Like, I don't like the scene. The fight scene that happens in episode 3, where they're kind of in an anti-gravity situation, I don't remember that at all. I didn't remember that when I, you know, was going through rewatching it. I was like, there's probably 4 or 5 memorable scenes in this episode that sticks with, or in this season altogether that sticks with me. But overall, I'm kind of rewatching it and re-experiencing it for the second time, essentially.
Right. And I kind of like this, you know, I kind of like this idea of watching the new show for the first time and going over it, because in the beginning of this episode, I did not like this show as much as I do right now. Because after going through and breaking it down,
I think us talking about it and you getting a better understanding, I know the season gets a little better after this, but I think you'll like it and you'll understand a little more, and you might be more into the next couple episodes. Because once the fighting really ramps up, like we saw, for example, Joel Kinnaman's and the actor who plays Vernon Elliott, you saw some really good action scene where they're fighting each other, and, you know, Joel Kinnaman just, he makes it look so easy, but you can't tell that it's rehearsed or choreographed. It looks legit. And the story, the season's not great. There's some probably storytelling issues, and it's not a perfect season at all. It's not a perfect show at all. But the choreography and the visual effects are two things that will not let you down in this series. So it's great. And
yeah, I mean, there was a car drove by, so you want to cut that out for editing. That's why I was quiet. What was I thinking? Yeah, I mean, I don't know the actor who plays him in that first, you know, the first 3 episodes, the big-ass white guy. What was his name? The actor's name?
Joel Kinnaman. It's the same guy who plays Captain Rick Flag in Suicide Squad and in the new Suicide Squad that comes out next year.
That was him? Oh, yeah, that was
him.
Dude got jacked. Yeah, holy shit, then.
So he filmed this after Suicide Squad, and I was like, I saw Suicide Squad and then saw the actor, and I was like, well, I didn't care for him too much in Suicide Squad, but he is much better acting wise in this show than he was on Suicide. But Suicide Squad was
Suicide Squad was just bad.
It was a train wreck.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, his performance is definitely a lot better in Altered Carbon than it was in Suicide Squad. That's why I was kind of surprised, because his acting was not great in Suicide Squad.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's And now after seeing this, I went from not really liking him to I like him, and I'll watch things that he's in just because he's in it. Because now I know he does have acting chops. He is a good actor. Yeah, thanks this show for liking him a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep an eye on it. But I kind of want to see how this season progresses, because I don't know how long he's going to be in the sleeve for. So I don't know if, you know, we're near the end or if.
Oh, yeah, that's the great thing, because they could just recast him in the middle of the season. And this is probably one of the only series where you have no problem with it, because it's tied into this story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking that during when I was like halfway through the second episode, I'm like, they're really missing out, because with this concept of the show, they could theoretically keep the show going for like 20 years if they have the right storyline. You know, yeah, if it's good and they have a good storyline, because you can constantly recast characters, you can constantly and you could bring a little bit new dynamic for each actor. I'm like, they blew it by going with this storyline, because they could have kept this going for a long time.
Well, no, I mean, not only that, like you bring up, that's a great point, because now we know Joel Kinnaman, a relatively big actor, given he was in Suicide Squad, he does some other movies. So you kind of have an idea, okay, he's going to be in, if not all, most of season one.
Right.
Now, in season two, I'll tell you right now, he's not in it. It's another lead. I won't tell you who.
Well, I know who it is. It's on the freaking cover of Netflix. Like, oh, as soon as, yeah, I'm like, spoilers.
Okay. So you know, Anthony, I forgot. Anthony Mackie, he's the lead in Takeshi Kovacs in season two.
Okay. And well, now I got to, I think I kind of got the idea, but.
The season three, I mean, if we would have gotten one, which we're not. People were hoping, including myself, that we were going to see. Now, his original sleeve was played by an Asian actor I think it's Will Lee. And we were hoping to see him take the lead, because he's pretty good. You see him in all the flashbacks, and he's really good in these flashbacks. We haven't really seen him yet in episodes 1 through 3. I think you get some glimpses of him in 2 and 3, but you'll see him a little more in later episodes.
Yeah,
but I was hoping it would be him, and it's like you said, it's one of those shows where you could have a different actor play it every season, or he could stay in the same sleeve for a while, and if one guy gets tired of him, you know, boop, another guy comes in. I hope someone will pick up, maybe not now, maybe 15, 20 years from now, if they ever try to revamp the series, they could do something like that. And fingers crossed, given the success of season 1 and 2, at least critical wise, it wasn't a huge success, but fan reception was pretty good. The author's like, I may even go pick up the series again and start writing about this character again, since people are liking it. So we might see a fourth book come out, or a second trilogy come out about this character, because it was so well received in this show.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I mean, they did do 3 books and we've only gotten 2 seasons. Do you think that this show would have a strong enough fan base to where if they really push, they could get that 3rd season back? Just because, like, to get the ending of this trilogy that they had? Because I couldn't imagine them going past 3 seasons.
I think it's a little too niche to have the fans push.
Fuck that. DC fans got the Snyder Cut released.
You guys, yeah, but they we're kept talking about pushing millions and millions of fans. I'm not saying it can be,
yeah, but it shows that people can have an influence. The Sonic, I don't know if you remember that, but Sonic, when the Hedgehog came out, they were like, that's looked horrible. And you had guys in their basement that made better.
We're talking about Sonic the Hedgehog, something that's been around for 30 years.
But this was the live action movie,
right? But Sonic's, a pretty close to household name, because it's been around forever. People have played it in their kids, their teenage years or their youth, and now they're adults. But you can still get kids going out and playing it. It's something that's been around a while. This, you know, like I mentioned, the book's only been was only published 15 years ago, and yeah, it's very niche. It's not impossible, but it's improbable.
In 2020, nothing's impossible anymore.
I never said anything's impossible. It's just not going to happen.
All right. Well, if the improbable is going to happen, it's going to happen in 2020. That's for damn sure.
No, not happening. But we got off track a little bit. Let's, like I said, we're talking about the episodes. 2 is an interesting, like 2 ends kind of, he's just digging deep into it. And then he ends up banging banging his client's freaking wife, which is after reading the book and watching that scene, I was a little disappointed at the end of episode two, knowing what happens in the book. Or knowing there's so much more to that scene in the book, and it's like, it makes you think, and it makes you really think, oh, okay, maybe this guy really was murdered. Maybe she did have a hand to play in it. Maybe, you know, maybe there's something more going on to that. But in this scene, it's just a pretty good sex scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you want to go for sex scene.
Yeah, and it's just
she's pretty
hot,
too. Everybody's hot. All the rich people are hot as hell. I guess that's one of the benefits of being rich.
I guess so.
Well, then again, the cop's pretty damn hot, and she's not rich. She couldn't get to sleep.
And speaking of the cop, in these first three episodes, she has a freaking tracker on him.
Yeah, which apparently is something else illegal.
Well, it's not illegal, but it's like you need a warrant for it, and she didn't get a warrant for it. So, yeah, technically it is illegal. And it goes back to her abuse of power, how we were talking about, you know, she was hiding this body that the police department thought was missing, and that the mom of the victim even thought was missing. So she's sitting here tracking Kovacs illegally without a warrant. And her partner even finds out, and he's like, well, I guess it's a good thing I'm not actually looking at you tracking him right now. So let's talk about something else. It's like, maybe the police department's a little corrupt, or maybe it's just these two cops who kind of, because they're so close, he's letting her get away with it.
Could be. I don't know.
So we've
covered pretty much most of it.
Yeah, we covered most of it. There's a little alliance formed with Elliot and Kovacs, because Kovacs offers to have Poe offers to have him do some, I think they call it psychotherapy, because the trauma that occurred to her whenever she died was so great that her stack's kind of now messed up. So now he's having Poe perform therapy for her, and in return, he needs Elliot to help him. And this is where we see, as his backup, especially in the third episode, because he gets invited to a party to interrogate a bunch of people. And
everybody who might want to kill the rich guy. I don't remember what his name was.
Lawrence. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so he invites them all to a party, and then he gets absolutely nowhere. The only useful thing that comes out of it is that he finds out in his will that the kids get nothing if he dies. So he knows immediately, okay, it's not going to be any of the kids, because he thought about that for a split second. It's not going to be the wife. She doesn't get squat, and there's no reason for her. I mean, it could be the wife.
Could be, but I mean, what I'm like curious about is he didn't tell him, because he asked when they were together at the end of the episode, did you find anything out? Like, nope. So he may have an ulterior motive to, you know, later in the episode, maybe he may end up killing him or letting the Marine, who apparently, since this guy Lawrence did something to his wife, that's why he wants to kill him. Maybe he'll just let him kill him at the end.
Not his wife, his daughter. Because one of the things, he goes to Licktown, which is where Vernon Elliott's daughter worked, and that's kind of where we find out that Lawrence has a kink where he likes to abuse the shit out of sleeves, because he gets, you know, he gets off on that for some reason.
Yeah, and then the end of three, the stripper that are we going with stripper?
I don't know what to
we'll just go with stripper.
Entertainer.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with the entertainer. The entertainer, she sets him up, drugs him, and a couple of the guys snap her neck. Now, they snapped her neck.
No, slash her throat.
No, I thought they snapped her neck.
No, they slashed her throat.
Well, is that going to fuck up the... is she not going to come back now because of that?
I think she can. Will she? I don't think she does in this season. But can she? Yeah, I think it's possible. Huh. But yeah, not to mention, now that you brought up those two guys also appeared in the second episode. The first time he goes to the club, and he leaves the club after meeting the stripper who gets her throat sliced and poisons him, he gets jumped by two guys. And these guys, one of them says, and I quote, "You should not have come back." And it's like, we haven't seen these guys yet, so what are they talking about? And then it's like, well, maybe Kovacs is now sleeved in someone who caused trouble at this strip club. So now these two muscles, which is just the meatheads who kind of are, you know, which another great fight scene, by the way, makes me think, since given what happens at the end of the third episode, I think they think that it's the original sleeve holder and not Kovacs when they kind of drug him and kidnap him. You recall?
Could be.
You were,
I know what you're talking about.
Because it's the fight scene where kind of Vernon confronts him after leaving the club his daughter worked at, and then they get into a scuffle, and then he gets arrested. The Kovacs gets arrested. But that was a great, again, another great, well-choreographed fight scene.
I don't know. I'm trying to think about it for a second. I mean, it could make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those, and I didn't catch it. I watched each of these episodes twice. Once driving home on vacation, and then again once I actually got home so I could take notes on them. And it hit me the second time. I was like, "Wait, this is weird. We've never seen these two fuckers before. What's going on?"
Unless they were the guys that were killed at the end of episode two or episode one that transferred into.
That I thought for a second, but
they didn't destroy the sleeve, did they? Or not the sleeve, the
One guy was destroyed. But yeah. But they were saying in that episode that person, that hitman, tends to double sleeve, so he'll have two stacks and two different sleeves. So now they have one, and this could be the second one who came back and found him, but I don't think the second one would have the memories of the first one, so...
Shit, I'm almost tempted to call them Holcroxes. What are they called? Holcrox? I don't know. Holcrox from Harry Potter, that Voldemort used to trap his soul. Holcrox.
Oh, shit. I have no
Because that's idea. Almost what it's like, you know? Because, I mean, it's almost like they're dividing their souls like a Holcrox. I don't know. Maybe our Harry Potter fans know, but...
I don't know. Maybe. If there's any Harry Potter fans, tell us. You got to let us know. Just hashtag Deep Space High or send us a message on our Facebook and Instagram.
Yep.
I want to get into a couple talking points that I have jotted down. We already mentioned he gets kidnapped at the end of this episode. So I wanted to get your thoughts. Okay. There's a couple things I want to get your thoughts. Given that you've seen this for the first time, or you're seeing this for the first time, what do you think of the concept of the stacks and resleeving? I know we touched on it a little bit, and it's a little foreign to you, and it kind of lost you at the start of the first episode, but so far, the premise and how this universe is set up, given that the human body is kind of meaningless now, and that stacks are king, how are you liking that so far in the series?
Well, it kind of makes sense, but you know, there's still more to the stacks that I would like to understand. I don't quite understand where they come from, because they said something that there was a magic tree and there was one on Earth, and supposedly he was from the planet that they had thousands of them that are responsible for these stacks. It's kind of confusing, and I'd like them to go in a little bit more details with it. That's kind of why I said like Avatar in the beginning, because, you know, trees and being able to fuel the energy and transfer between, it seemed like a lot like Avatar.
Okay, hold on. Time out. You're confused. Because that tree that the Bancrofts have, that the one that he's seen that could be thousands of meters tall, that's kind of where, as envoys, their bases were. And they had a tree growing up from their base. So they've seen him. Now, the trees don't necessarily translate to that's how the stack works. The stack is a piece of technology that the show explains. From the age of one or two, the Protectorate puts sleeves in all of its citizens, and then starts tracking memories that way. So if you die before you're real death.
I thought they were talking about that it was the one that was thousands of meters tall was the only one on Earth, and he was talking about how he's seen them on other planets or on his planet, and they do a flashback. So, I think I just need to rewatch these first three episodes.
I think you do, because it's his connection to his envoy days and his past. It's not a connection of how stacks work.
Okay. All right. So the stacks are, again, then my next point would have been the Holcroxes. You know, they kind of remind me of the Holcroxes, just transferring your souls, especially since apparently you can split them multiple different ways like the one guy can do.
Well, and it's one of those things, the stacks are like you said, a floppy disk, and you could download a consciousness onto this floppy disk. Well, to get a second stack, that shit's so expensive that you have to steal it and kind of blank out a stack, or you just have to manufacture a new stack and purchase your own.
Yeah, that... and apparently you can do it with animals. And I thought that was fucked up. Like,
oh yeah, that bitch is screwed up. Yeah,
she fucking took a stack of, what was it, her ex or somebody that pissed her off or something?
She said it was a, I mean, I don't feel as bad given that it was a rapist and a murderer. She tried to do something like Bancroft.
She put it in a snake to see what would happen. Well, no, I think she said she wanted to see what would happen and as like a punishment. And then she said that she tried putting the stack into a human body to see what happens. And apparently you revert back to your base instinct because he was just
animalistic.
Nothing. Yeah. I mean, he was like blank. He just had his base instincts. And it's so she put it back in just so that way she could keep the damn snake. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because it was a situation where she pulled him out of prison and kind of leased him like Bancroft did with Kovacs, and then did this experiment. And she said it with a cop there, knowing that it's illegal to put a stack in an animal. And that's when she was like, that's where we went back to the class issues where, you know, she's also the one that says, well, the law doesn't really apply to us.
Yeah, well, I guess slavery is a thing again then. In the future.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, I can't remember his name. The rich guy owns.
Lawrence.
I mean, he says that he basically owns the, what's his name?
Kovacs. Come on.
Kovacs. I'm struggling with the names here. Wow, you know I always struggle with the names.
I know. At one point, our listener is going to be like, get your shit together.
Well, that's why I go with the nicknames.
But then you can remember the nicknames and not the regular names. I mean, come on, you got issues.
Yes, because I gave them the nickname. I didn't give them their name. It's easier to remember the names I give them.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he says he basically owns them. And they lease them out from the prisons. They lease them out. It seems like basically slavery's back. Or a different form of slavery.
It's a different type of slavery because, you know, essentially, Kovacs is out on parole, and if he breaks parole, which is either, you know, Lawrence dies again, he doesn't solve the murder quickly enough, or does something else ridiculously stupid, he gets thrown back on ice to finish his prison sentence when there's no end date listed on his prison sentence, since he's considered a terrorist by the UN and you know, wouldn't really want him to come back up again.
Now, I'm curious if the UN is, like... Do we know if that's a separate organization or is that like just the United Nations? Like,
I'm assuming it's a separate organization.
I guess that's something else to figure out.
Yeah, but another talking point, and this will probably be our last one because we kind of covered the third one already. So this one was the way weapons are in this time period is weird because it's a mix between guns that actually shoot bullets and particle weapons like Star Wars's blaster or Star Trek's phaser. So I want to get your take, given the shows that we've watched that have used exclusively phasers or particle beams as weapons, seeing something that now has a mix, even though that is probably 400 or 500 years in the future.
Well, I'd say it's probably a little bit closer to a disruptor than it is a phaser, but...
Well, whatever, you know what I mean. It's a particle beam type weapon.
I know what you mean, but Trekkies, there's a difference. It's a Trekkie thing.
But if Trekkie, I'm pretty sure Trekkies are smart enough to know what I meant to.
Yeah, they could have figured it out, but...
A beam type weapon versus a projectile type weapon. For those Chris's who like to nitpick everything.
Yes, I'm very good at it. So
it's very freaking annoying.
Well, I just do it to you on purpose because it annoys you.
Anyways, answer
I think, okay, so there's different perspectives, I guess. You know, when it comes to the projectile weapons, it was actually something that they explored in Star Trek because you couldn't always use the phasers in certain environments that have certain radiation because it disrupts the beam. so they would use projectile weapons, or they had at least a prototype
in Nerd.
Deep Space Nine. I told you, I'm a Trekkie. Everybody should know that. But, you know, there is something like that in Star Trek. That may be a plausible explanation since they do travel to other planets. Another reason may be that it's just cheaper. I imagine that those types of phasers or blasters or energy projectiles require a lot of energy. So I imagine it would be really expensive to make. So I think it could just be, you know, bullets still get the job done. You know, it's going to work. So
you think it's a more realistic take on futuristic things than Star Trek?
I think so, because you're getting this from what we've seen in these first three episodes. It's basically a continuation on our own storyline, like what we think our future might be like. You know, that's why we get this classism, class debate, religion. It's a little bit more related to, you know, society today. And I think that, you know, with this class society, and we talked about it earlier, we're getting it from the perspective of the rich. We're going to see more of these energy projectiles because the rich can afford them. But if you were to go to the regular everyday people, the projectile weapons might still be common because, you know, they're poor, so they're stuck with centuries old technology.
Or even the cops. I'm pretty sure the cops mostly use projectile based weapons in this season or in the series.
I don't know. They haven't. I don't think the cops have shot their weapons.
I don't think they have, but I think looking at
again,
them,
save taxpayers' money, give them the cheap shit. Yeah. Still works.
All right. Well, I wanted to get to your 2 points on that. So
I'll give you one thing though. That one gun was pretty damn awesome. Where you shot it, and you have like a reverse magnetic field or whatever, and it just zooms the bullet right back in the same direction. That was pretty fucking cool.
Oh yeah, I like the line that Elliot gave after that. He's like, "You could have stuck me like a kebab and then over again."
Yeah,
there's some good little some good little humor in it. Another one that stuck out was the first episode when the Catholics are protesting, and one of them's like, "God's gonna judge you for all your sins," to Takeshi Kovacs, and Kovacs was like, "That'll keep him busy a while." It's like, it's like there's some good little. It's mostly dramatic and whatnot, but there's some good little one-liners that are just pretty funny.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to go back and rewatch these first three episodes now that we've talked about it a bit, because I think I missed a lot of I think I get the general storyline, but I think a lot of the details I kind of just completely missed on.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think I'm going to rewatch it and kind of go from there.
So given what we've talked about today and what you've seen in the first three episodes, how do you like Altered Carbon so far?
Again, I said it earlier, and I'll keep saying it because it's true. Nudity makes every show better. So my initial impression was, that's my opinion. That's all that matters to me. The actually, that's not true. Dad's gonna agree with me. You know that. But sorry. Originally, I was thinking kind of 5 out of 10. With the nudity, we make it 6 out of 10. But now that I'm kind of thinking about it, and you kind of explained it a bit, it is actually a little bit better, and I'll go with the 8 out of 10 because the fight scenes are great. The CGI is great. I mean, it was definitely a high-budget show. They put the time into it, but I wish the directing would be a little bit better, and I wish that they wouldn't go so many slow-motion dramatic scenes.
Or if you're gonna do it, I still have no idea what the fuck you're talking about with those, because I
think it's the first episode. The beginning of the first episode, and they're doing the flashback. It's really confusing. You don't know about the sleeves. You don't know about, you know, any of the shit or what's going on. You're constantly doing flashbacks and then slow-mo action scenes. It's the first scene was just overdone dramatically, and it really irked me. So, but other than that, I think it's interesting, and it's got some potential, okay. And I'm looking forward to watching the rest of the season because it definitely got better. Over each episode.
And I think it'll get better. It gets better through the next few episodes. And I don't remember how much I liked the last couple episodes, but we'll get there. Especially since we're changing it up. I know last episode we talked about we were going to do the first half of the season. And then sometime in between recording and now, we actually decided to change it up and just do the first three episodes. So
Yeah, I think it was just for time-wise, because Steve went on vacation, so it was a little bit difficult to
get a recording, and you're busy. So we decided to cut two episodes, and we're, instead of, you know, having part one and two for Altered Carbon season one, it'll probably be 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 1, 2, 3, and 4, depending on how we break up the last four episodes. So we shall see.
It could be. Maybe, well, I don't know how the finale is, but maybe what we'll do is we'll go 3, 3, and then do an episode on the season finale. If it's, maybe we'll do that, because
I think, if I remember right, I think the finale is mostly an 8 in the very start, or sorry, in episode 9 in the very start of 10. So it might be one of those, you know, you break up 6 and 7 into one part, and then 8 and 9, or shit, 7 and 8 into one part, and then 9 and 10 into its own part. But we'll figure that out.
Well, we got time to figure this out. What was your opinion of the first three
episodes? Well, like I said earlier, it's one of my favorite shows on Netflix. I like it. I like the mind bendiness, the trippiness. The first time I watched it, it was very different of a sci-fi show than I'm used to. I'm used to the Star Warses and the Star Treks, and man, I can't even think of other ones. Just things that kind of take place in the future, but that aren't really this cyberpunky show. So this was very different, and it was very mind-bending, and I liked it. And I like the action scenes. I like how Joel Kinnaman is in this. Like the fight choreography. I just, right now I like it. I don't see anything. I won't give it a perfect, you know, I wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10, but maybe 8.5, 9 out of 10 for me. But like I said, after rewatching it some, after reading the book, the start of the book, because I've read more of the book than we've seen on TV, there's some parts where I'm a little disappointed, because it's like, oh shit, we're leaving stuff out. This scene had more. It's like, oh, this scene also had more. It's like, fuck. It's like, you know, you need like 51 hour episodes just to get everything that's in the book, and unfortunately you can't do that. So I mean, I do understand it, while it is a little disappointing and enlightening in a way.
How is it enlightening?
Well, it's like, you know, you come to a I mean, there's not many shows or movies that I've seen where I've read the book and have seen the show. So it's just one of those things. You got to understand, a TV show can only take so much out of a book, and you know they're going to change some things around. And a movie like for Hunger Games, you can only take so much out of the book and stuff it into a 2 hour and whatever minute movie out of a 400 page book. So,
should we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat
him. Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it.
Punch it,
Hawkeye.
Punch it. Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So what do we have in store for next week's episode, though?
Well, next, like I said, we did change things up from our original plans. So next time on Deep Space High, you could expect part 2 of Altered Carbon, where we are going to discuss episodes 4, 5, and 6, entitled, I don't know, because I'm not looking them up for the part. So just go to Netflix, find season 1, episode 4, 5, and 6, and that's what we're doing.
All right. Well,
that sounds a little bitter. I'm not meaning to come off bitter, but that's how it's going to be right now.
That's funny. All right. Well, I think that will do it for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next time as we continue our conversation of Altered Carbon.
Yes, and don't forget to keep the conversation going with the hashtag Deep Space High. Also, check us out on Facebook at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews, and Instagram at Deep Space High Pod. You can stay tuned in the latest announcements, like the announcement that you would have gotten on Facebook with us switching it up on part 1 and part 2. So check us out, give us a like there and a follow, and you can stay up to date on what's going on with our show.
Yeah, and then you could also, if you guys want, actually just go ahead and do it, even if you want to or not. It helps us out. Be sure to leave a comment or a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how we're doing. For example, today we tried something different, and I am actually outside smoking as we're doing the show. Let us know if there was anything that you liked, you didn't like, if you heard some background noise. It helps us out, because it makes us better at what we're doing.
Yes, which is pretty much going to be people calling me out on my editing. So thanks for that.
Yeah, so keep calling them out. Call them out. I make fun of them enough on the show just to keep it going.
Yeah, but how much of it makes it into the final cut? Nobody knows. Well, I do, but
you do. All right. Well, I think that'll do it. I am Sky Marshal Chris.
And I am Jedi Master Steve, and usually we have a little quirky line out of here, but I guess I don't have anything to say, but watch your stacks.